Our legend of the game, though, lucky enough to work with him last night on a rival radio network, which I can't mention at this point. But just to run through some numbers, 124 test matches, 250 ODIs, just the, 563 test wickets.
Still reckon he retired too early. Would love to have seen him go on a bit longer. But
We can ask him why he did retire. It's our great pleasure to welcome to the program Glenn McGrath. G'day, Glenn.
G'day, guys. How are you going?
Yeah, morning, really Glenn. Well. Thanks for your time this morning. We do appreciate it. Mate, we ask all our legends about this. Cricket, how did it have become a part of your life out in the western blocks of New South Wales?
Oh, just as a kid, just always played, you know, in the backyard with my cousins and my brother and then just at school. So it was just, I just played for fun and enjoyed it, and as simple as that.
Any other sports, Glenn, or was cricket all-consuming for you?
My parents came into Narromine, from the farm to play tennis every Wednesday night and on the weekend. So I started playing tennis when I was seven, mm-hmm. and played a bit of rep tennis around New South Wales, and then a bit of golf through school. And then in my early teens, I started to play a fair bit of basketball. And basketball started to go off, played a fair bit of rep stuff there. And then I got invited to play a game of cricket over in Parks at Tui's Country Cup and match. And then from there, I got invited down to Sydney. So cricket took off. And, you know, out of all the sports I played, cricket was the one I loved the most.
Was there a desire to make a living and a career out of cricket at that time of your life, Glenn?
Oh, I was, when I got invited down, I was 18 going on 19. Yeah. And I was just playing Saturday afternoon to the bush in a small country town. And so I guess, you know, if you asked me back then if I could choose any job, it was to play cricket for Australia and as a fast bowler. But when I was 18, there was probably no chance of that happening. And then within the year, I moved to Sydney and sort of the rest, within 4 years, was playing for Australia. So it all happened very quickly.
Were you living in a caravan?
When I first moved to Sydney, I didn't know anyone, so bought a caravan dubbo, towed that down, and lived in that by myself for the first 13 months out of home in the big city. Just on Botany Bay, down Ramsgate, Santuzzi area. It's no longer a caravan park there anymore. But, so that was how I moved to the city.
And how did you get to the Sutherland District Cricket Club? Who was the connection there?
I was, Doug Walters played in that Tui's Country Cup match. And thought I had a little bit of potential. Mentioned me to Steve Rickson, who was captain coach of Sutherland.
Right.
And got the invite down. It was funny, about 6 months prior to that, one of the guys, I think it was Trevor Houlihan from Penrith, came out and had a look at me in Narromine, and he said, "Oh, looks okay, but nothing special." So I didn't get the invite for Penrith, but ended up coming down for Sutherland.
Penrith is still kicking himself to this day.
Exactly. He never lived it down either.
Oh, about to say, yeah. Well, you mentioned, Glenn, that your rise through the ranks was very quick, and you made your test debut in Perth against New Zealand, the 93-94 summer. Can you tell us what it was like to get that first baggy green?
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. I'd only played, you know, 6-7 games for New South Wales, so I was just loving everything to do with first-class cricket. And here I was preparing for my first test match, so I don't think I really had time to be nervous or what have you. It was just, I was just enjoying myself so much. And next, you know, I'd had a couple of tests under the belt. So in one sense, I think that probably helped me. And then I learned more about my game probably when I made the test level. So that combined with my couple of years at the Cricket Academy really got me going.
What was the best feature of your bowling, Glenn? I mean, a lot of people, you know, you weren't express pace, but you were quick enough. Bounce was significant because of your height. Your accuracy is almost a byword. Was it all of those things put together?
I think it's a combination of a lot of things. You know, I always try, if I could bowl 100 mile an hour, I would have been bowling 100 mile an hour. Don't worry about that. But talking to guys like Brian Lara, Sachin Tendulkar, they always said it was far harder facing someone who, you know, got bounce rather than pace and skidded on. So, you know, guys bowling 150 skidding on, they said was easier to face than guys bowling, you know, 140, high 130s, low 140s, that really got that bounce. And when I try to bowl really quick, I've probably lost that little bit of that bounce. So I just try to stay tall, bowl the ball where the batsman didn't want it, with that control, with that bounce, And I think by having that control I had, it allowed me to set very aggressive field placements. And the batsman only had to make one mistake and he was out. So I think I worked that out fairly quickly. And then, you know, when you've got guys like Mark Taylor, Shane Warne, Mark Waugh, Ricky Ponting, those guys in the slips, makes your job pretty easy.
Yeah, they don't drop too many, do they? Glenn, the 1995 series against the West Indies in the West Indies was famous for so many reasons. Was that the coming of age of Glenn McGrath? Because injury and circumstance, all of a sudden, you were Australia's number one fast bowler on that tour.
Yeah, it's funny. From second grade right up to the Australian team, I got an opportunity because the guy in front of me got injured.
Right.
Okay. And I grabbed that opportunity. And when they came back to fitness, I was sort of cemented in the team. So the West Indies, I guess, was another example of that, where Craig McDermott, who was Australia's strike bowler at the time, got injured, did his ankle. Damien Fleming, who was also in the team, did his shoulder. And it sort of really gave me a chance to lead the attack. And we came up with a fairly aggressive game plan that we're going to go hard at the West Indies, especially their fast bowlers.
Whose idea was that, Glenn? Who was it, a team idea? Was it your idea? Was it Tubby's or Steve Waugh's?
It was a bit of a team idea, I think. I think the guys that had played the West Indies previously had been, you know, caught in the fire plenty of times with short stuff. So Mark Taylor, Steve Waugh were very keen for our bowlers to give it back. And, yeah, that was the game plan. I was more than happy to come out and do that. I thought I was going to cop it anyway, so might as well get in early. And I think that was quite significant when we went hard at their bowlers, you know, showed them that we weren't, you know, going to back down, that we're here for a challenge and here for the battle. And, you know, that had a big impact on that series and probably my career, and kick-started it off from there.
Retaliate first, as they say.
Exactly.
Was at that point that you felt like you belonged? A lot of the people we speak to as legends talk about a moment, a match, something happens and they feel like they belong at the highest level. Was there a moment for you?
Oh, there's probably two significant moments when I started my career. The first one was after the first test. I felt that this level of cricket wasn't beyond me.
Yeah.
So that sort of held me in good stead. And then the first match on that West Indies tour 95 in Barbados, I took my first five wicket haul in Test cricket. And I think that feels like, okay, I've now contributed to the team. I'm making a difference. And that fills you with plenty of confidence as well.
Glenn, so many iconic series from that period onwards, because it was a golden era in Australian cricket. I'm always really interested in that 1997 Ashes tour of England, when things seemed to be going wrong for Australia at the time. Glenn, Tubby was out of form. Two tests were gone. Australia was 1-0 down. I know this was Australian side full of champions, but was there any doubt at that period of the Ashes series that, hang on, things could be going awry here, we could be shot?
I don't think there was any period where that. I think after the first test at Edgbaston, where we got absolutely hammered, England won by 10 wickets and we bowled pretty poorly, bowled the wrong length, more Australian length rather than the English length. And I remember the next day, we were out in the middle bowling off our long runs the day after the test finished for about 2 hours, getting that length right.
Wow.
And I think that made a significant difference, because then we went in to the next test at Lords.
Yeah.
Where
rain,
we bowled out for 77. Rain. I picked up a few wickets in the first innings, and I think that changed the whole tone of the series. The match was washed out in the end with Australia well on top, but that changed the tone, and from then on we just dominated.
One of the things that I think you sort of bucked the trend, everyone thinks, you know, the big fast bowler and they've got no brains, that they're at the top of their run and they're just charging in, but you're very analytical in your approach to cricket. Is that your personality trait, or is that something you applied to your professional career mostly?
I think it's those dopey batsmen trying to make themselves sound smarter by putting the bowler down to start.
Yeah, there'd be a bit of that.
But no, I think my goal when I played was to play what I classed the perfect game, where every ball went exactly where I wanted it to go. And I guess control the controllables, I guess you could say. That was sort of my motto. And yeah, you know, just try to keep it really simple. Not let the batsman sort of worry me with what he's doing. Just stick to my plan. And I just think if you come up with a game plan, it's about being able to execute it. And if you've got a bowling plan, you can execute it. It's not working, you can change it and adapt it. But if you can't execute a bowling plan, then it doesn't matter what you do. So that was the most important thing to me. And then working with a guy at the other end, you know, when you had guys like Jason Gillespie and especially Shane Warne at the other end, you could really work together, build up pressure, and knock teams over.
Did you ever have that perfect match?
I went close. A one-day match in Wellington in New Zealand where I reckon I bowled 59 balls out of the 60 exactly where I wanted it.
Wow. Gee, there you go. What about legend has it, Glenn, that you can recall each of your 563 test wickets? Is that correct?
Not anymore. Okay. I used to be able to, when I had about 360, 370, I could sit there and write them down in order and picture how they got out. A little bit long in the tooth now, and I remember I used to do a few speaking gigs and things here and there, and that was a bit of a party trick. I could work it out, how many wickets I had at the start, finish of the series, break it down for each test, and generally break it down to a certain batsman. And everyone thought I was absolutely incredible. And then a thing called Google came along, so then they could actually check up on me, so it made a little bit tougher. But yeah, that the wickets was my motivation to go out there and take as many as I can. So some tours I remember, I'm a little bit long in the tooth now, so the brain doesn't work as well anymore.
No, I understand.
What you used to do though is just predict every series win. that became a regular occurrence during an Australian summer. Where did that come from, Glenn? What was the purpose of that?
I guess, you know, to me, team was the most important. So team always came first. But you know, for an individual, you can still make yourself stand out within a team environment without taking anything away from it. And I just looked at the team we had and felt if we play as well as we can, then no one's going to get close to us. Mm. Secondly, I felt that when there was a little bit of pressure on the team, that brought the best out of us. So that was a way that I could put a little bit of pressure back on the team. You know, there was a few boys in there that felt that they hated me doing it, guys like Ricky Ponting and Damien Martin. But by the end of my career or our careers, they just thought, oh, that's what he does. So they didn't worry too much. And the third thing was coming out and predicting or targeting a batsman.
Yeah.
I remember watching the West Indies of the late 70s, early 80s, and they seemed to target the captain. And when they got on top of him, it had a big effect on the whole team. Mm. So I thought I'd come out and do that. Had a bit of success against certain guys like, you know, Atherton, like Gary Kirsten, Brian Lara, those guys. So I thought if I come out, put a bit of target them, put a little bit of extra pressure on them. If I got them out in the first test once or twice, then the media did the rest. and if they were good enough to beat me at my own game, I could live with that. So it's just the way I challenge myself, but also, you know, I guess make yourself stand out from the rest of the team while still not having a negative impact.
No, I understand. Well, obviously pressure didn't bother you as such, Glenn, and I think one of the great things that cricket lovers and sports fans admire about you was, I guess, the pressure you must have been under during your first wife, Jane's illness, and you still were able to maintain that extraordinarily high level of bowling at test match level. It must have been tough for you, though, Glenn.
Oh, it's, you know, playing cricket, I did that because I enjoyed it. You know, what happened off the field with Jane and with everything was real life. And so, yeah, you do what you have to do, and I guess cricket was a bit of an escape where as soon as you walk on the field, cross that white line, you can focus 100% on what you're looking to achieve out there. And it didn't matter how tough it got out there, I always had in the back of my mind that I'm out there, we're out there because we want to be out here. So, that was just always in the back of my mind. What was happening at home was real life, and we just did whatever we could to get through. And you know, you realise pretty quickly what's important in life, and it's all these little things we worry about are not really important. It's the people you have in your life, your close friends and your family. And I've been very lucky with the people I've had in my life. So, yeah, even though there's been tough times, I do consider myself a very lucky person.
Yeah, great way to look at it. Mm. First among equals, the batsman you bowled against?
Oh, there's a couple. Yeah, there's always a batsman on any given day can do well. But there's probably a few standouts. VVS Lakshman did pretty well against Australia. But the two that I reckon would be, you know, Tendulkar and Lara, the two sort of, you know, obvious suspects, I guess you could say. Both quality batsmen, you know, some of the best of all time. And, you know, Tendulkar, 200 tests, the amount of runs he scored on his day, he was awesome. but always felt that I could just change his game. Mate, he would wait for a bad ball. Whereas Lara, he just you couldn't change his game. He wanted to go out there. He wanted to entertain. Just wanted to play all the shots, hit boundaries, and a very flamboyant batsman. So I try to use his ego against him. It worked 15 times in tests, and the other times he got hundreds and big hundreds and double hundreds. So depending on the day, you know, Brian was a little bit interesting where some days he was focused, other days he was all over the place. So I put Brian slightly in front of Sachin because he was just a, just a quality. He just, you couldn't hold him back. And when it was his day and he was focused, there was not much you could do.
Well, what about captains you played under, Glenn? Because you played under some great Australian captains, Mark Taylor, Steve Waugh, Ricky Ponting, etc. I guess they all had their own strengths.
Oh, they did. And, it's hard to really separate them and say who was the best because, they took the team over at a different time and moved it to a different level. So AB brought Australia up from, the bottom of the pile. And when he finished off, there was he passed on a pretty good team to Mark Taylor. But I think AB's attitude was, let's get in a position to win before going for a win. So just consolidate and work there, which is understandable where he brought the team from. Then Mark Taylor brought a different attitude about, okay, let's go for a win from ball one. A little bit more aggressive form of the game, which I like. Mm-hmm. He passes a very good team over Steve Waugh. And then Stephen said, okay, let's go for a not only go for a win from ball one, let's crush them from first ball. Sort of his favourite word was ruthless. Mm-hmm. And then poor old Rick, where do you take the team from there? And Rick did an amazing job, went on to win two World Cups, win in India for the first time.
Yeah.
Had seven senior players retire in a 2-year period and still held the team together pretty well. So very lucky with the captains I played under. And always I get asked who was the best. And I can't separate it. Mm-hmm. So for the first time a few years back, I did put down my best 11 Australian cricketers that I played with, and three of those guys were in the team, and I made AB captain. And I think if you ask the other three, they would agree 100% with that. AB, he's got the respect of the players. He's probably one of the toughest cricketers that's ever played the game. And for what he did for Australian cricket, it was pretty amazing. So he was, I put him down as the captain of that team.
We've got to go, but I just want to... You realise you cost Australia the Test Series, the Ashes, in 2005. 4th of August.
I'm sure about that.
Well, the ankle.
What happened there? You trot on the ball and that's it?
Yeah, we got to the ground half an hour earlier than we normally do, which why I don't know, because I'm very much with routines and keeping things very similar. And normally I stuff around the change rooms, get out to the for warm-ups, just as we're ready to go, and off we go. And this day got out there, we're still half an hour to go before we start. So I'm just standing there, and Brad Haddin picks up the rugby league ball, and we start just passing it back and forth. You know, pretty sort of simple thing, innocuous. And he threw this terrible pass that bounced halfway between him and I and just rolled along the ground, so I missed it. So I just turned to run and pick the ball up. Little did I know the coach had gone out and put the cricket balls out behind us, ready for us to warm our shoulders up. And I still don't remember seeing the cricket ball. First step, trod on it, went all my weight went on it, and I went down. I remember going down knowing I'm in serious trouble. And, the rest is history. So I still don't remember seeing that ball. So I've been to Edgbaston a couple of times since, and they want to put a little plaque on that bit of the ground. And a lot of English people still reckon that that's their favourite sporting moment. So it's, one of those things that you wish never happened. Mm. You know, if you had the time again, but, it was just something simple. We weren't doing anything stupid. It was just the way it turned out.
Yeah, all right. We'll blame Haddin for that one. Glenn, great to have you on the program. Really appreciate it. I know the listeners are appreciating it already, the feedback we're getting via SMS. Thanks for your time. Good luck with the rest of this season. And of course, we look forward to hearing you across Channel 7 and your various media outlets.
No worries. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks, Glenn.
Glenn McGrath there, legend of the game. That is pretty special.